Live from Los Angeles, this is LA Talk Radio, broadcasting for the seventh year.
You're listening to Flow Guitar Enthusiasts with Jeff Floro and Scott Sill, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Great tone. Everyone can tell what it is, but how do you get it? With so many styles of music, with new gear coming out almost daily, what's the secret to great tone? Welcome to the Flow Guitar Enthusiast Radio Show, where we talk about tone, what it is, and how to get it. With your hosts, Jeff Floro and Scott Sill, we will talk to the creators of tone, the manufacturers, and the players as we explore tone and the gear that gets it.
Tonight on the Flow Guitar Enthusiast, we welcome Solo Dallas, regarded as an expert on the sound of AC/DC, in the use of the Shaper Vega Diversity System, which was part of Angus Young and many other bands' sound in the late 70s and early 80s. Joining Solo, we welcome back Ron Marino, and we have Gary R. from the world-famous Amp Shop and Bass Exchange. Flow Guitar Enthusiast is proudly sponsored by Sweetwater Musical Instruments and Pro Audio at www.sweetwater.com. And now here are your hosts, Jeff and Scott.
Good evening, everybody. Welcome to the Flow Guitar Enthusiast Radio Show. It's a little hot here in the studio. The air went down, but it's been hot over in LA in general. But it's going to be a lot of fun. We have a great show for you tonight. This is going to be really interesting. Hey, Scott, how you doing?
I'm doing good. I have a couple things I wanted to bring up. I just posted up a video from last week's show. One of the videos that will be coming up out of William Cannon Geyser playing a song on his classical guitar before the show. So that's something that wasn't in part of the show.
Yeah.
So that's a pretty cool little thing to check out on my YouTube channel at Selenium. The other thing I wanted to bring up for our listeners and any folks that are part of the MI world or any artists or anything like that, if you guys have heard of ZVEX Effects, one of their main folks from there, Andy Richardson, unfortunately passed away last week, and Julie from Earthquaker Devices and multiple folks are putting together an auction and a benefit for his family. So they're looking for people to participate in the auction, obviously, but then by bringing different products, unique ones, they're also, you know, looking for folks to, you know, obviously participate and purchase things off of the auction. So look for that coming up in October. We'll tell you more about it. But if you've got any unique items that you want to put up and donate to the auction to help benefit Andy's family, make sure to contact Julie over at Earthquaker Devices.
Oh, that's great. Yes, sorry about the passing away. But I also want to mention this month at Sweetwater is Guitar Month. And I also want to mention they have a sale, and one of the sales is on an SG, because our guest today or tonight has brought in an SG, which I just thought I'd have to mention. But check out, call your representative from Sweetwater and ask them about what deals they have. They got some interesting stuff, up to 75% off on certain articles. So it's well worth it to check it out. Also, too, my LR Bags Anthem pickups came in the mail.
Oh, nice.
So I'm waiting for – I just have to pick up the Gibson acoustic, and we'll be bringing the guitars to Monique to install them. So that's the next step. I'm going to install one in my Martin DXM. And I have a Gibson J45 that my friend Chris has, and we're going to put that in there. It's a rosewood one, so it's nice.
Cool. Well, I also, you know, speaking of that, I just wanted to mention I just got in the mail today, actually, the American Style speaker from Celestion, and their, I believe, their 90th anniversary special edition speaker. So I'll be doing a shootout between those two and the, including the V-Type, which is one of my favorite speakers and super affordable. So.
Oh, that's cool. Which is their 90th anniversary? What's that supposed to be, like a blue?
No, it's a ceramic. It's just a combination of multiples of speakers. I think it's probably more like a Classic 30 and an H.
You know, oh, okay.
Same time.
Yeah,
Vintage 30. I
remember them talking about that, but I'm curious to hear the American one. That one should be pretty good.
Yeah.
So, but anyway, okay, no, that sounds good. Anyway, we'll keep you posted, and this whole thing with the LR bags, what we're going to try to do in studio, when I get the guitars done is we're going to actually compare the pickups to the mic. We'll mic it in the studio, and then we'll do the pickups. So you'll get a good shootout there of what it, if, how the LR bags work. So anyway, okay, let's go ahead and take a break, and we'll be back with our guest Solo Dallas, and we're going to get into some interesting guitar history.
Hey, this is Tracy Guns, and right now you are listening to the Flow Guitar Enthusiasts Show with Scott and Jeff and Andy and Tracy, and we're all here partying and going nuts. Anyways, this is the only guitar show I know of that you get to listen to guitar players and manufacturers talk about the cool stuff, and you can call in and talk to them, and you're going to have a good time.
Hi, this is Aaron Raby, your resident guitars and amps geek at Sweetwater Sound. 1-800-222-4700 or catch us on the web at www.sweetwater.com. Sweetwater is proud to partner with The Flow in bringing you the latest and greatest in all guitar-related things, be it tone, be it artists and musicians, their secrets on their tone, amplification, and live performance. We at Sweetwater are just as passionate as the folks on The Flow in bringing you what we consider to be the best in pro audio equipment and guitar and PA gear. Give us a call and we'll discuss gear whenever you like. Number here is 800-222-4700. And again, you can catch us on the web at www.sweetwater.com. I'm Aaron Raby, and thanks again for listening.
Welcome back. Let me introduce, there's a bunch of people here in the studio. First of all, I want to thank Ron Marino for coming in and introducing me to Solo. It was him that put us all together. Yeah. And we have here with us Solo Dallas. He basically did a lot of research on Angus's tone for AC/DC and discovered that he was using this wireless system that actually was, you know, changing the tone of his guitar. And he went about building a replica, and basically the system was designed by Ken Schaefer for Vega. So it's the Schaefer Vega diversity system, and was one of the pioneer wireless systems, because I remember at the time when that thing came out, there were some other ones out, and they used to drop out all the time. And the diversity system, where you actually have two receivers, allowed you to, like, if you're running across stage and stuff, they'd have the antenna on each side, so basically it would just continue, wouldn't drop out. But anyway, what I want to start out with first, anyway, welcome to the show. And we also have Gary on here. Thanks for coming down, and we'll explain everything, what's going on with Gary, too. But Ron, what I want to talk about real quick is the fact that there's these little-known things that affected the sound of some of the classic, iconic guitarists that we know. Can you give me a little bit of background of that?
Well, you know, when I thought about Solo was coming and spoke to Gary about it, I thought the premise of the radio show to the listeners might be, you know, it would be interesting to hear what made certain iconic sounds for certain guitar players, and it usually was some type of audio or pedal that would, you know, influence the sound of their sound. So, for example, Ritchie Blackmore and the Iowa Tape recorder that compressed it and gave it a sound. Eddie Van Halen's GE10 in front of his pedals pushed it to a limit to gave it that particular sound. And others like Angus, who we'll talk about today, had something about in front of their sound that wasn't just a guitar and a Marshall or, you know, straight into the amplifier. There was something influencing that when you came on the radio, you knew who exactly it was immediately with all those guys. And I think guitar players with pedals now have such a huge, you know, in way of being able to go ahead and make up their own sound, you know. So I thought this was a good segue.
Well, it brings to mind that the, for example, the one I knew about was Queen, was the Deacon, which was basically a little hi-fi radio preamp mm-hmm. that he modified and used as a treble booster going into Brian May's AC-30s. And actually, I have the little Vox Deacon that they supposedly modeled after that. And but it was basically sometimes, yeah, he used it as a driver unit.
Sure.
And the Range Master, which became the Tone Bender, eventually that treble booster, that kind of circuit was basically a hi-fi circuit that they used to just push the gains, mm-hmm. you know, to overdrive the input stage of like Marshalls and stuff like that. So, yeah, it was it's interesting how much those little things that most people don't realize how it affected the sound. Now, let's go back a little bit in time here. This is an interesting time. Around 1975 is when Ken developed it. I don't think the unit came out until 77. But let's kind of get an overview. And Solo, talk about what was out there at the time, because that's really important. The significance of the Schaefer system was how much it revolutionized, you know, using at that point a wireless system, not just the fact that it had a sound that everybody liked, but the fact is it was probably the best wireless system that had come out at the time.
Yeah, to me, this is exactly the way it is, Jeff, and thanks very much for introducing it so nicely and so with such good information. I know it first person because I've been speaking with Ken, who became a hero of mine when I found out about him and his invention back in the 1970s. So the story goes like this. Ken at the time was engaged with the Rolling Stones tour manager.
Mm-hmm.
And the Rolling Stones were actually using a wireless system that would use to drop out the whole time. So told me that he could remember the system catching interference from the Pope speaking in Rome or the police cars, you know, going by. And so he wanted to really develop, him being a radio enthusiast at the time, he decided that he wanted to develop something that would work reliably. And so he put himself to work, and 1 or 2 years later, he presented the world with the Schaefer Vega diversity system that, differently from the other systems of the time, had, in fact, like you said before, two receivers with two antennas set at a specific different distance, one from the other, thus enabling a much better reliability in keeping the transmission between the transmitter and the receiver on.
Right. But if I remember correctly, at that time, I mean, now it's commonplace. Diversity is commonplace. But at that time, I don't think there was any other diversity system. That was the first one. And the other question, because I listed, you can take a look. There's hundreds of guys that were using these systems. They were not cheap back then. That's why I never got one. I couldn't afford it. But the point was, a lot of touring acts were using these guys. But I wanted to know, were they just using them for guitars or were they using them for vocals?
They were using them for guitars, for bass, for vocals, and even for some other acoustic instruments that could be microphoned properly on stage, like saxophones and brass, mm-hmm. stuff like that.
So it was used for that. Now, your system isn't actually the wireless part of it. It's basically the preamp of the system, right?
That is correct, yes.
That's the main thing that you... Tell us a little bit about your research with Angus and how you got to create the replica, that whole thing, and your dealings with Ken, all that.
Gladly so. It all started with me trying to match Angus Young's sound of the 1970s and early 80s, that for me, it always represented the pinnacle of AC/DC's sound. And specifically, I was always enamored with Angus Young's sound. So I ended up buying exactly the same equipment, the vintage equipment that Angus used to use on those albums, and I did a lot of research finding the proper amplifiers and the guitars. But something was always missing from my research. I mean, I could record myself. I even ended up buying the same microphones, the original microphones that were used in some of those albums. I'm talking about the Neumann U67s and Neumann U87s that were used on Back in Black. So Back in Black was actually the album that always grasped my attention since I was a little kid, and that was the sound that I was after, that I wanted to replicate. So I started researching online, and I started going through all the possible magazines with reviews of Angus Young, speaking about the type of equipment that he had been using back then. And probably second or third time that I was going through the same articles, something came up on Guitar Player magazine when I read specifically a question that had been asked to Angus, and that was, so you don't use any effects? And Angus answered, no, I just used a Schaefer Vega diversity system. So my question was, why to answer a question specifically related to special effects, to effects for guitars, and you're answering with a wireless system? So that got me researching about the Schaefer Vega diversity system, and I soon found out that it contained a companding system based of a compressor and expander, one in the transmitter and one in the receiver, and then a sort of monitor output switch on the receiver that could be used. It contained an amplifier inside, and that could be effectively used as a boost, as a further boost to, in fact, push further the input gain stages of amplifiers.
I was wondering, did Angus Young, is this the reason why he wore shorts after he went to the Schaefer Vega diversity system?
Good question. I wouldn't know, but that's a good question to remember.
I mean, I saw him in long pants before he put this on, so.
No, it's interesting because I presume that so many people were using that. Like I read on your website, I think Pink Floyd bought 20 of them, you know.
That's
and
correct.
I presume that most of them, it was considered a high fidelity system. So I would assume most of them weren't using it as an overdrive. So I think that's unique to Angus, if I'm correct, that he was the one that actually pushed it to change the sound. So, which is interesting in itself. So I don't think it's interesting because most people, again, the Schaefer system was a real high end, at least to my knowledge, when I saw it came out, and I'd see it in like Recording Engineer Producer magazine, an old magazine that used to be out. I remember seeing an article about it and all that stuff.
How much did it cost back then? And what in today's money, what does that equal?
Yeah, these are all good points that we're bringing up. And the cost was also a very interesting, quote, factor, as it was extremely expensive at the time. I seem to remember Ken Schaefer himself told me that it was about $5,000 U.S. dollars of 1977. So
wow.
I think indexing to today prices, it could be around the $20,000 mark. So in fact, it was a system that only the rock stars back then could afford.
Yeah, no. Well, Vega was a real high-end company too at the time. So it was, I remember it was considered studio grade. And the only time you ever saw things of that price were like preamps, like special custom, even before Focusrite, probably Neve.
Oh, yeah.
Or something like that. They ran that high end. So it was really a really, really expensive and exclusive type of a thing. So anyway, moving on, you discovered that he was using this effect, or he was using it as an effect. So what happened after that?
Correct. So after that, I started researching desperately for such Schaefer Vega diversity system, but I soon learned that only 1,000 had been produced from 1977 to 1981, when Ken actually left this endeavor of his and went on working for NASA and other projects that he had in mind. So I couldn't find any Schaefer diversity system, neither online. I remember looking even on paper U.S. magazines selling used equipment for months, but I could never find any. So an idea came up to me, and I started looking for Ken Schaefer online. And I was hoping to find an email or something that I could get in touch with him, and maybe he would hook me up with someone owning one.
What happened with them? Was it that they just kept using them, or they didn't, or they just put them away? But you would think that some of those would show up on eBay or something.
This is another very good point that you're making. It would seem And especially now that I know more and that I've been in touch with people that actually owned several ones, including Frank Marino and Angus Young himself, who told me about it. Mm-hmm. Well, people still have them, and they have them in storage. And we know for sure even Chris Stein of Blondie has his, because we got a picture of his unit. And he actually said, he mentioned this in an email. He said, I'm sure that if I fire it up, it's going to work like it did back then. And I can testify for myself. I have three working units. They still work beautifully 37 years after production. So just like you said before, high-hand units. Really well-made and great-sounding. So several people probably stopped using them in the late 80s, I presume, thinking that other newer technology would probably work better or sound better. You know, and this makes me think, because many of us, or even some other players that I was young at the time, probably it's not something that affected me, but many people actually moved on to other new technology, you know, concerning the guitar, and they lost something in the process of moving to newer technology.
Well, his circuit for the preamp, to me, is golden. But I would assume the technology advances from 1970s to now, especially in wireless transmission, is much better. And there's digital now. So a lot of the new systems are using digital transmission, which you don't have the problems. One of the problems with analog wireless was it compressed the signal and you lost the highs. And most of my friends that were using, and we were talking before the show, that's one of the reasons I wasn't really into wireless that much back then, because the highs were gone and I lost gain. I couldn't keep the gain up. And using Fenders cranked, I needed every ounce of dB coming out of my guitar to keep the gain up, you know. But that was the issue. So it would seem like that would be. But on the other hand, like you said, that preamp stage, that circuit, that's a golden circuit. That's important.
It definitely is to me. And this is why I decided when I finally was able to get in touch with Ken, who told me, look, Phil, I really liked your work that you've been doing this month. And I since you wrote me a letter, because I finally found an email of his, and I emailed him. But he only replied to me 2 months later. I was so happy, like a child during Christmas, that I remember posting about him replying to me on my blog, solodollars.com. And he said, I got two units that I wanted to give to museums, and I have them, and you can have them if you want to, because I really like the work that you've been doing researching my units. I would never think that someone could be interested in them 30-plus mm-hmm. years after that, but seems like you're really into this. So he shipped the units to me, and I started working the units, being able to demonstrate, in fact, that it was, at least for the sound that I had been looking for mm-hmm. over 30 years, they were exactly the missing link to tone and sound, just as I imagined it, mm-hmm. and I heard it on those albums that I was in love with. And so I decided right there and then, and even I remember talking about this with the community on my blog, that I wanted to create a replica of this, cloning the audio guts of such system without having to replicate the somehow older technology mm-hmm. of wireless transmission. But I really wanted the sound. So that's the way that I started finding engineers to reverse engineer the two systems that I had. And it took quite a while because it's a quite complex system.
Oh, so Ken didn't give you like the schematics?
He didn't have the schematics anymore himself. And so no schematics could be found. So we had to actually reverse engineer the two units.
What happened with Vega? Where did Vega go? Who bought the assets from Vega? Did you ever find out?
Yes, I did. I did find out. And as a matter of fact, there was another company, might be another Californian company. I don't know for sure, but I think it was called CETEC.
Yeah, CETEC. Yeah.
CETEC. Okay, thanks for that. So CETEC bought it, and it became CETEC Vega. And matter of fact, that was the first system I was able to locate in place of the Schaefer Vega that I couldn't find. Because I really wanted to demonstrate that these units had something inside them that was part of the sound that I had been looking for.
So was the C-Tech different?
It was different. But still, it was in the same kind of world with a compression inside, a compressor inside the transmitter and the expander, inside the receiver, and still some boosting capabilities in the monitor output in the front panel of the receiver. So I started with that, and that already was a big statement that I was able to make sound-wise. But of course, I did want the original Schaefer Vega Diversity that also looked way cooler in its black color that had been decided by Ken. And by the way, I'd like to say hello to Ken Schaefer right now, that I think he's listening to us, and he's really still my hero. Love you, Kenny.
Yeah, no, I mean, I remember that box when I saw the picture of it. Like, I remember that thing. It's a big system for what it was. Now, the C-Tech, just on a side before we go back to continuing with the story, was that cheaper? Was that the same price?
I think it was the same price, but it had probably they brought it down a little cheaper. They considered it probably an evolution of the system. However, they only tailored it to a voice transmission. So I don't think it was used again for guitar or other music.
Oh, okay. So it was they were specifically going after vocals.
Exactly.
Yeah. So
it was used very much in TV broadcasting, for what I know.
Okay. So now let's move forward. So you had talked to Ken, you had gotten your hands on some of the units. So what happened next?
So we took a year of back and forth from the engineers, and I wanted the best engineers that I could find, and I had contacts in Germany, in Europe, in Germany and Austria. So we got one of those engineers that seemed very, very skilled. And he actually did a great job reverse engineering it. And we started getting the first prototypes. And so I was there playing with the prototypes and sending files to Ken to let him listen 30-plus years after to the core sound of his device. And I remember him being on Cloud 9. He was very happy to see that the unit was...
Now, at this point, I just want to interject real quick. At this point, you're looking at the preamp stage. You weren't using any of the wireless. So this replica that he's selling has just the preamp to get that sound. It's used specifically for that. So it's not a wireless system now like it was before.
This is extremely correct, and I'd like to restate this again, because we call it a replica, and it's only, quote, only a replica or a clone of the audio guts of the system, of course, because once again, I even think that that kind of FM transmission may be banned here in the States and in other parts of the world.
Oh,
those
really?
Frequencies. I think so.
Yeah, I was kind of wondering about that.
So it would have been extremely difficult to
and so the newer wireless systems have a whole different band.
Oh yeah, they're all in the same bandwidth as like Wi-Fi.
Oh okay,
yeah. So that's courtesy of our FCC and government.
Mm-hmm. Well, some other countries, some of those are like military frequencies, and
well, that's why
it's even more serious.
I'm glad that you spoke about the military, because it just made it pop up again in my mind. I think Ken might have found and thought of some inspiration by military system for the diversity specifically.
Oh, really?
The dual antenna thing. Yeah. So nice thing.
You have to ask him. I mean, I'd love to have him on the show at some point, but you have to ask him and maybe post it on your Facebook page. How he thought of the diversity, how that came about, because that to me was like pure genius. And if he got it from it would make sense for military.
Roswell.
Alien technology, hey, you know? You never know.
I like that.
Angus Young is using alien technology to get his sound.
Right. Well,
that to me
player,
is
so.
That's just like that to me just like fits. No, I'm just kidding.
To anyway. Me too.
It's so right here. Okay. So anyway, so you developed this. The first one was this bigger system.
Yes.
Now, you have several different ones. You have a little pedal. Can you tell us the differences on them?
Yes. The differences between the two actual products that we have now are the fact that the circuitry is exactly the same. The schematics are the same, of course. We really wanted to stress the fact that it's the same schematics, and actually such schematics are the integration of two separate audio circuits. One is the one contained in the transmitter with a compressor, and the other audio circuit was the one contained in the receiver that had an expander in it, and also the amplifier.
Now, you're not using the compander at all.
We're still using the compending technologies. Yes, okay. Yes, we are, and that's part of the sound, in fact.
So they're chained in sequence, right?
Exactly.
You can't separate and use one or the other. It's together.
Exactly, okay. Yeah. That's exactly. We really wanted to replicate it one-to-one. The only thing that we took away was the wireless transmission. So we integrated those two circuits, and they speak to each other like, you know, like the wireless was there, but actually the wireless. There's no probably, wireless transmission.
Probably actually better because you're getting full frequency going into there.
Great point.
Yes.
And so that's one thing that we replicated. And so we replicated also the amplifier in the monitor section of the receiver. And you mentioned before that something you didn't like about those dated systems back then was the fact that they cut some high frequencies. And
yeah.
I liked what you said, because one peculiar characteristic of the Schaefer diversity system was actually that it maintained it re-enhanced such high frequencies. Mm-hmm. On the receiver side, there was a specific enhancing circuit that would re-enhance the high frequencies. In fact, it's even brighter than the instrument without it, and it's an interesting.
Did you get it right? Yeah, no. One of the things I remember from the reviews were that it was, you know, it was sparkly. It didn't have that dull sound, which to me was made a difference. So.
Exactly. Yeah.
So can you tell us a little bit? Why don't you go through it a little bit and explain the functions on the unit, what the controls are?
Willingly so. So we were saying that we got two different models out there. One looks like I strongly wanted that. It looks like the original receiver of mm-hmm. the system. So it's like a tower. It's a mini tower and colored in black. Really, it's very similar to the original receiver that I mm-hmm. think it's a. Very iconic of the 1970s technology. I love that. And the other is the our smaller product it comes in the form of a pedal, in fact. And once again, it's still analog technology, but it's surface-mounted technology. So it's not discrete audio components
Can you explain the difference that you're talking about from the... how the pedals, it's the way it's wired, right?
It's really, we had to have someone redesign every single component, because if you open up the tower, you'll find capacitors, you find all those kind of components that you find in the original system. So it's a discrete analog components, just like, if not even the same ones. I think for the compressor chip, I think we were able to source the original compressor mm-hmm. chip that was used back then.
So with the foot pedal, what's the difference?
That's been redesigned with modern technology. Still analog, but it's surface mounted. It's miniaturized format.
Okay.
So that's basically what it is. Still analog, but miniaturized. So you won't find capacitors in the same way that you see them inside the tower version.
Right. And it's much smaller. Can you hand me the foot switch, the foot one? We have the big one patched in right now. So it has an input and just a straight input and output control. Bypassed, and I see a light for power and boost. How are those activated?
Right, great question. The input that you see to your left, that represents the black knob that used to sit on the transmitter, and that was used to match the given instrument to that specific system, to that transmitter and receiver. And that varies the amount of compression that you will have in the final sound. And the output is the actual monitor output that is able to further drive, with which you're able to further drive the amplifier input gain stage. And when you turn the unit on, which works exclusively with a power supply, because it's a very powerful clean boost that will actually really kick the input of any given amplifier. Mm-hmm. And we'll hear this briefly here in the studio. When you turn it on, you have you see the LED showing, the red LED, the unit is on, of course. But then you have to press the on the foot switch for the unit to become engaged, and at that point the boost comes up. Yes.
So let me ask you this: the output, okay, the output you can use to overdrive your amp, but if you take the input knob and kick that hard, will that overdrive the output stage? So you can actually do a distortion within the unit. And also, too, obviously, like it has that compressor or compander in it. So basically, as you bring the gain up of the input, it's basically squishing, which kind of acts like a preamp of a. So it acts like it functions almost like a preamp of a regular amplifier. Where mm-hmm. when you're pushing the tubes, it's compressing it. So you can actually overdrive in the system itself before it goes to the amp. That's interesting.
Well, the people can't see me nodding, but have been nodding at
He's
Jeff.
Nodding.
What Jeff has been
and
saying,
I'm,
I've been
I'm
nodding
holding
the whole
the
time.
Unit. So basically, the foot switch one is just basically this small little box. It has a bypass switch.
That True
you,
bypass.
Foot switch. And then it just has an input knob and an output knob. And then you just, you know, you dial it up. And it's pretty basic, pretty simple. It's not a big footprint, so it'll fit on your pedal board without a lot of clutter. And now you mentioned, I don't know if this is ahead of ourselves, but you mentioned possibly another version of this?
Yes. Actually, it's coming out by request because we have a lot of professionals that love the sound of both units. They maintain the same character, but there seems to be a slightly different something to the tower unit. So several professionals would like to tour with the tower unit, with the GT. That's how we call it, the gold tag edition, because it's got a brass tag to the side with a Ken Schaefer signature. Mm-hmm. So the pros would like to tour with that one, and so would like to tour with something that had the discrete analog circuitry inside as opposed to the surface mounted.
But it's still a foot pedal.
So it will be still, again, a foot pedal. It's going to be larger, of course. It's going to be bigger.
Yeah. Well, I know the debate with discrete electronics. Even today's amps, like the newer Fender amps that are reissues, they're using the similar type of thing that you're talking about with this replica. And they actually do, like even Marshall, or you know, you can order a custom-built hand-wired, which is all discrete. And I've talked to engineers, and they've all said there's a difference. So, I mean, I can understand that they would think that. Because I know from my amps there's a difference. So I'm sure if it's discrete hand-wired stuff, it's going to sound different.
Mm-hmm. I just keep on nodding.
He's nodding. He is nodding. So, but anyway, yeah, no, that's pretty interesting. So that'll be coming out before. I'm holding off. We're gonna demo the unit in a minute. We got to turn it up a little bit. So I want to get everything, all the information out first, because I want to kind of crank it up a little bit and let everybody hear this thing really speak.
What power is it? Like, is it 9 volt?
No, it's actually higher than that. It's 12 volts for the paddle version, and it's 15 volts for the GT edition, for the tower edition.
Does it come with a power adapter when you buy the pedal?
Yes, it does.
Okay.
It's 12. And what's the power on that guy?
15 volts.
15 volts.
Yeah.
And the new pedal? 15?
We're looking into that because we'd like to. It's not exactly standard. These numbers, you know that.
Right, right. But exactly I'm just wondering if the voltage affects the tone.
We think it does somehow. So
everybody's nodding. There's a whole bunch of people nodding right now.
So we like to keep the great sound that this unit has. So
what was the voltage of the original one?
Good question there you're asking. That I don't know. But I'll take notice of
we'll
that.
Have to please ask Ken about
of
that.
Course.
I want to know. So, yeah, it's pretty simple, but I like the idea that you can actually overdrive it. It's pretty interesting. Okay, why don't we try it a little bit? Let's pull ahead and play it. I'm gonna mute our voice mic so you hear it. I have it set up because it is loud, and I don't want to color the sound with the voice mics. So what I want you to do is show the guitar clean, then kick the boost in that you have, the setting that you have. Then we'll stop for a second and talk a little bit more. And then what I want to do is have you go in and overdrive the input circuit, push that into the second one, and then actually go ahead again and push the output and overdrive the amp so we can give an idea of the different tonal possibilities. So what we're going to do right now, he's going to play the guitar straight, and then he will show us, he'll kick the circuit in, and you'll hear the, because he has it set up for that type of Angus sound. So let's take a listen to that. Hold on, let me set that up. Okay, I'm going to mute the mics. Okay, that's the clean sound. Now he's going to kick it in. So you can hear there how much he's driving it. That's incredible. Another thing you need to ask him is, what's the output? How many decibels is that? How many dB is that output of this unit? Because I'd be curious to see how much it over. I mean, compared to,
we do know that already.
Oh, what is it?
It's a kick around the 20 decibels.
Oh, so 20 dB. That's pretty heavy duty. That's a lot of those booster pedals are not close to that. Mm-hmm. So, okay, now let's. I want you to play, and what I'm going to do is I'm going to adjust the input volume and go all the way up and all the way out while you're playing. So just play something with the unit and I'm going to go ahead and adjust it.
I just want to add, right now we're maxed out because we have a little amp here, and I wanted to max out, in fact, the effects that this unit can make in the sound. And you will see that, you don't know, but it behaves exactly in the same way that the original Schaefer Vega diversity system behaves. So you'll see that when you roll off either one of those two knobs, it will lose signal and it will
get cleaner, that's fine.
Stuff like that.
Now, what I want you to do is, actually, I'll let you adjust it. So what I want you to do is set the output. The output's up full blast now. So he's going to turn it to 50%, okay? And what I want you to do is bring the input to about a quarter at like 9 o'clock, and then bring it up as he's playing. Okay, I'm going to mute the mics. Okay, that's what the he brought it up. Bring it down again to about 9 o'clock and just play a minute so you can hear how, because you could hear it start distorting. Okay, he was slowly dialing it up, but you could hear it. Now, what I want you to do is do that riff again, play hard, and then go back to 9 o'clock. So, because you started playing a little, you started getting into it. So, I want you to be consistent so we can hear the change. Okay, so at 9 o'clock, and then he's going to slowly dial it up full blast. Here we go. Okay, so you can hear how much it's distorting within the unit. Now, the output is half, so he's basically not really overdriving the input of the amp that much. He's basically, I mean, there's nothing there. At half, I think it's pretty much close to unity. So he's basically distorting the unit internally, and it's a nice clip. Mm-hmm. and it's saturating and it gets a fat sound. It's getting a really fat sound. Now, let's put the input at half. So you're basically a medium clean sound. And then what I want you to do is, he's at half right now. I'm going to have him turn the gain of the output to the amp slowly. Same thing. Do the same riff. And basically we'll hear it overdriving the amp. Okay, now to give you a little, now that you can hear it, it was a much more subtle distortion, the difference in the tone, but you could hear it actually overdriving the amp. Now, go ahead and turn the thing all, the input, the output all the way up like you were going to do, and then turn the output at half, and then slowly bring it up to hear it fully. So you can hear the difference. So we're at the output's half, the input's full. So we're distorting the unit, and now we're going to use it. It's almost acting like a distortion unit as opposed to just a straight overdrive. So, okay, go ahead and do it again. Now, hold a, like a blues lick and hold the note. I was noticing you were doing a little, when you were doing your fills there and you did this a little bit, it kind of got like a sweet spot. Leave it the way it's set up all full out, but I want you to just do, bend something and try to get that sweet spot.
We'll do so.
Yes, that's very okay.
So solo. Can you show us kind of the Angus Young sound with that unit?
Right.
And tell us what the amp is that we're using. Maybe we want to have, you know, other folks tell us from who brought it in. Is it your amp?
No. This is not my amp. This is my friend Gary's amp at the amp shop.
Yes.
And he was kindly provided by them.
Gary, well, actually, before we have you start playing, let's talk about Gary. Now, Gary, right now, you're the exclusive distributor of the whole system.
That is right. We distribute them in the United States right now. We're exclusive guys, and we're supposed to get the first shipment, hopefully next week.
Mm-hmm.
And those pedals will be available for sale. So far, we just got limited run, and we pretty much sold them on the first day. And everybody who tried, and we have a list of people who are waiting for them right now. And from guitar enthusiasts to the pro guys to the studio guys, everybody impressed with sound. No matter what you play, Angus Young, Eddie Van Halen, or like early Pink Floyd, that's the tone which.
Right. Now, the original ones, you had a special limited run of that special signature one. Those were made in Austria?
That's right.
And this one I'm holding here, this foot pedal, is this made here or Austria?
Made in Austria as well.
Okay, so the ones we're actually seeing, the original, the early ones.
Yes, so, European ones. And so still the current batch, the current batches are still being produced in Europe.
Okay, so the discerned? I know the collectors are going to want to know this, if there's a difference between the European and the U.S. one.
There will be no difference whatsoever.
So the components are the same. You're buying them from
We're sourcing from the same sources. There's just going to be assembled here in the States.
Assembled in the States.
This has been another dream of mine, because I want to bring the product back where it first started, in the U.S. of A.
Mm-hmm. So that's true. I didn't think about that.
I did, though, Jeff. Matter of fact, I'm very grateful to you guys, to the Americans, because, you know, and Ken knows this as well. So it's been another dream of mine to bring it back to mm-hmm. the States, and it's going to happen in the following months.
Okay. No, that's good. Now, Gary, we're almost at the end, and what we'll do is we'll have him play the Angus piece to take us out. Real quick, where can we get these? Now, you're going to have them in a week. They're ready to be people to buy them. Where can they buy them?
We sell them on our website, guitarbasepro.com.
Okay.
You can call us direct as well, 818-386-5500. You're welcome to come in our store for the demo, bring your own guitar, your amp, to try to check.
Where's your store located?
We are located in the heart of Sherman Oaks, right on the corner of Woodman and Ventura.
Oh, you're just right down the street from the studio. How cool. Okay. No, that's good. So anybody is interested, and I'll try to get all the information. We'll post this stuff up, too, on the Flow site so that everybody knows where to get a hold of this, because it definitely is a important sound. I mean, it's impressive. I'm really impressed by what you have here. Now, Ron, tell me a little bit of what you're up to and how to get a hold of you.
Well, let's see. Still, you can contact me through my site from the morenosales.com. And today or this afternoon, I came from a session that I'm recording with Paper Moon Gypsies out of Orange County. They've got a deal, a record deal, so we're going to start playing with them. And September 27th, the Pedal Board Clinic in Thousand Oaks at Instrumental Music. So I'm doing my pedal board clinics. Mm-hmm. And we're supposed to book one in Vegas at Countdown Guitar sometime towards the end of October.
Okay.
And so we're still pending the date, but that's
okay. The when you also to let us know that, we'll post that up on
there. And we're playing, the Gypsies are playing September 27th at the Coach House in San Juan Capistrano. Will be opening for Tab Benoit.
Well, you're going to have a busy day because you have that clinic and you're going to go right there and gig right after.
That's my day, man.
A busy time. And then Solo Dallas, www.solodallas.com. You can see more about the whole story of the diversity system. He has pictures of Ken Schaefer working in his room, developing the system back from the old days.
I'm interested in the one that's the plexiglass one. That's cool.
That is kind of cool. And also, too, he has a blog on there. I was reading some of the stuff on there of his reviews of different amps and stuff. Pretty cool, very informative, and he does know his stuff, guys. He really does. So check that out on www.solodallas.com. Well, thank you guys, all of you, for being on the show. Thank you, Ron, for introducing the solo. This is this was a very enlightening thing, and I love this sound of this thing. It's really cool. We're gonna steal one from them and let Scott do a demo on this. We're gonna use the foot pedal one. So stay tuned for that on the Selenium channel. Yep. But anyway, everybody have a great week. And what we're gonna do on the way out is we're gonna have them play. We're gonna have solo play Angus, and that will take us out.
Yeah, and just want to mention real quick, I want to thank Sweetwater for sponsoring the show.
Yes, yes, yes.
And thank Gary for coming down and bringing an awesome amp.
Thank you guys for inviting us.
Yes, and then lastly, next week is Elliot Easton from The Cars.
And his new band.
Yeah, the new band is
Bleeding Hearts?
Yes, that's it, sorry. But he's from The Cars and the Bleeding Hearts, which is a really cool little band.
His other band member,
Andy Babuk. Yeah,
I never get the pronunciation right. He wrote the book on the Stones gear and the Beatle gear. He's playing in the band too, so it'll be a real interesting one. So stay tuned for that. Okay, we're gonna go ahead and have you just jam out. Thank you again, everybody, and have a good week. And listen to this is great.
Thank you all.